in an unforgettable evening at Turtle Bay's Chocolate After Dark. Join us on Friday, February 7th from 6 to 8 p.m. and enjoy delicious chocolate treats, fine local wines, and a fun night out at Turtle Bay Museum. Perfect for date night or a special treat for you and your friends. This 21 and older event is too sweet to miss and sure to sell out. Chocolate After Dark at Turtle Bay Museum, Friday, February 7th. Buy tickets online at turtlebay.org.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6:05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
Nothing's changed. There's all sorts of wild alien theories out there, Martians among them. And so, you know, you think, oh, with all our sophistication, all our various outlets, this could never happen again. Well, guess what? It really could.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was William Elliott Hazelgrove, author of the new book, Dead Air, The Night That Orson Welles Terrified America. We'll talk in depth with William about that book coming up later on in today's program. First, we're joined by Dr. Paul Hosmer. He is chairman and associate professor of physics here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Hosmer, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Talking about the year in physics in 2024, and one of the reasons that I think this is useful and interesting is because it gives listeners a sense of the scope of physics and how it touches so many places in our lives.
Yes. I like to call physics the fundamental universal science. So that's one of the exciting things about physics, is that it's so general. We get to talk about things from, you know, the smallest things in, that you can think of in the cosmos to the largest and then everything in between. So it's a really exciting science, and so there's a lot of stuff that's happened in 2024.
Not quite a top 10 list, but close to that in terms of topics we'll get to today. I wanted to begin with something that was very obvious for people, especially in the northern part of the country. And if you looked on Facebook or Twitter, you saw pictures almost throughout the year of these amazing auroras, the northern lights coming down farther south, visible farther south than they usually were. And this is because of a solar maximum. Is that right?
That's right. So the sun actually goes through an approximately 11-year cycle where it's more or less active. And when it's more active, we see things like more sunspots and solar flares. And there's particles that come off the sun based on this activity, and that interacts with the Earth. And so what happened was we have more of this happening because, as NASA confirmed this year, we're in a maximum of this cycle. And so, yeah, we saw more of these particles interacting with Earth's magnetic field. And that drives these particles into the atmosphere. They collide with particles in the atmosphere, produce this really great light show. And, yeah, it's been really great. Me and my kids have been out all summer. We saw some really, really good show, and that's a lot of physics. So one of the exciting areas of physics is this area of space weather, the stuff that's going on between the sun and the Earth and how those systems interact. And so this is a great example of that area.
Was this a particular active year or particularly high year in the cycle, just because there were pictures everywhere? I don't remember it in the past being that way.
Well, again, it's definitely confirmed due to the fact that we're in a peak of an 11-year cycle, but seems like this is probably the most intense or the intense farthest south in maybe even 20 years. So it was definitely a good show, and we'll probably see some more here.
Ooh, very nice. If we continue to look toward the skies, there's been some research this year on outbursts at the top
of thunderstorm clouds. What was happening there?
That's right. So there's been a lot of really exciting and interesting research in physics in the upper atmosphere just in recent decades and even just the recent few years. And that is, we're learning more and more about really interesting, crazy electrical phenomena and optical phenomena that's happening up there. And so one of the things that we learned more about this year is that above thunderstorms, when thunderstorms are happening, there's actually bursts of gamma rays. Gamma rays are high energy, light, which is usually associated with things like nuclear reactions. And so this phenomenon is actually, just discovered a few decades ago. We don't know a whole lot about it. And so one of the cool experiments in physics this year is that we took over a U-2 spy plane and flew it over the top of thunderclouds and looked for the gamma ray bursts. And we learned some things. We did know that, there's different manifestations. There's some kind of a general gamma ray glow that's happening off the top of the clouds. And then there's these kind of rapid bursts that are associated with lightning. And with the U-2 spy planes, we learned that there's some kind of gamma phenomena, some flickering phenomena, they call it, that's kind of in between those things. So we learned new phenomena related to the gamma rays and also the fact that they're probably more common than what we thought. Now, Harvard put out a study to say, well, is this a danger? Like, our commercial airliners flying through these things? The good news is it looks like probably statistically maybe, once every 2 years a plane could fly through them. That is if we don't account for the fact that pilots naturally avoid flying through the cores of thunderstorms. So Harvard assures us that probably no airplane has ever flown through one of these things. But it's just another aspect of physics. It's really cool that we're learning about the upper atmosphere and physics gets into meteorology and what's going on in the atmosphere and how it interacts also with space and space weather.
Dr. Paul Hosmer with us, Chairman, Associate Professor of Physics here at Hillsdale College. We talk about the year in physics 2024. Every year has a big award, the Nobel Prize in Physics. Who was awarded that this year, and what was the field of study?
Yeah, so the award was actually in the area of, let's say, computing or artificial intelligence. So two people who are pioneers in kind of neural networks and computer learning. So I have to say this is, in some sense, somewhat controversial because it's not specifically, directly, let's say, physics. And these aren't physicists, although it's definitely not controversial that computer learning, computer-aided learning, neural networks is so important in physics. It's really, like everything, it's revolutionizing physics, and it has been for some years. We've done some research here at Hillsdale College in this area. So no one argues that it isn't fantastically important.
And you allude to this, but, people think about artificial intelligence, and there's a kind of like a philosophical aspect of like should we do, how we should use, and of course the sort of technological aspect in terms of how it works and how it is executed. So a little more perhaps, how does physics kind of fold into the AI world?
Well, an example is that you can, for example, you have just a lot of these experiments nowadays, we're coming with tons of data, more data than a human could go through, or we could individually, let's say, images of things like stars or data from pulsars like we do at Hillsdale College, Dr. Dolch. And, just more things that humans could possibly pour through, but you could teach a computer to look through those, tell it what to look for, and just tease out so much more information than we could have. In fact, we're sending, having computers go back to look at huge quantities of data that was produced many years ago at places like CERN, Large Hadron Collider, and just having it look at that and see if it finds other things that humans hadn't been able to find. So just in terms of data analysis, for example, it's pretty powerful.
One way to deal with massive amounts of data is perhaps through quantum computing, and this is something that not just years but decades worth of work and advancements, which means year by year we learn a little bit more, this ongoing work into quantum computing, what might have been somewhat new in 2024.
This is an ongoing area, so if we're doing like a top 10 list in physics, obviously the ongoing developments in quantum computing is one thing. And obviously recently there was news of Google's Willow.
Right.
And, so that's using something like 100 qubits of a certain kind. I mean, you can have, this is a very big topic, and we could talk about different ways to have qubits and the issues there. But one of the big advancements there is error reduction. So quantum computing is going to be very powerful, but there's prone to a lot of error, and so you have to have certain algorithms to try to reduce the error, and that's one of the big steps that this seems to have made. So, yes, just one of the big things in physics. Obviously, in physics proper, we're interested in the fundamental understanding of nature and quantum mechanics itself, what it tells us about the world, and the possibility of it being probabilistic is really amazing. But quantum computing is one of these practical technical applications that we're going to get. And that's one of the things we see in physics, is that physicists proper are really concerned in just understanding nature and what it's like. But it's amazing how even the craziest things that we pursue a lot of times turn out to have amazing practical applications, and quantum computing is one of those, and we're just going to see a lot more of that coming up.
Recapping the year in physics 2024 with Dr. Paul Hosmer from here at Hillsdale College will continue in a moment. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Owners, landlords, and tenants trust Authority Property Management at 2663 Victor Avenue. They manage a variety of properties, including single-family homes, apartments, condos, townhouses, multifamily properties, and commercial properties. Authority Property Management offers full-time management, including finding and screening tenants, rent collection, financial reporting, and final walkthrough home inspections when they move out. Contact Authority Property Management today at 530-410-6085 and check out their website at authoritypm.com.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Auto Body. You've been in an accident with your vehicle. You call your insurance. The first thing they do is tell you where to go to get an estimate and repairs. Well, tell them where to go and come see us at Coachmaster. They're sending you to their discount repair shop to get the cheapest repair possible. This is not in your best interest. You have the right to choose Coachmaster to do your repairs. All we need is your claim number, and we can handle the entire process. At Coachmaster, we don't repair your vehicle for the insurance company. We repair it for you. We use quality parts and products to ensure the highest quality repairs. Your vehicle will be returned to a pre-loss condition. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Coachmaster Collision Repair continues to be the leader in the North State for advanced technology in the collision repair industry. Remember Coachmaster on East Side Road. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
Hello there, this is Kevin Cry. Every other Sunday, I will be on KCNR, your talk radio, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. I will be discussing the issues that matter to you most. You'll be able to call in directly, ask questions, and have a dialogue open and free every other Sunday right here on KCNR, your talk radio.
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope. That's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works. You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We're talking with Dr. Paul Hosmer, Chairman and Associate Professor of Physics at Hillsdale College, about the year 2024 in physics. Dr. Hosmer, throughout the year, a lot of talk about energy needs and how to meet those energy needs. And in fact, nuclear reactors coming back online that have been taken offline for a while. That's all I'm going to make sure I'm right here. That's all nuclear fission.
That's right.
But there continues to be work on the idea of a fusion reactor.
Yes. Yeah, so for my money, this is the really exciting part is power through nuclear fusion. Fission has a lot of benefits, but there are drawbacks, inherent drawbacks involving things like radioactivity and production and management of fissile or weapons-grade material. Power from fusion, which is instead of getting power from splitting up nuclei, getting power by putting them together, very similar to the way the sun produces power. This doesn't have those kind of drawbacks where you're dealing with weapons-grade material, fissile material, radioactivity, and so this is a huge push. I'm really hopeful for this. The United States is really involved in multiple ways in pushing forward fusion power. And, you know, in 2024, for example, there was an announcement. The United States is part of this large collaboration, international collaboration, ITER, which is a research reactor, a very large research fusion reactor being built in southern France. And they just announced this year that they expect to go online maybe in the next decade, 10 years. So, you know, people say in fusion reactors, everything's 10 to 20 years out. but I mean, you know, we've seen some things like the National Ignition Facility break even power. And so I think we're really moving forward on that. And that's another one that's just going to, every year is going to be one of the top 10, I think, in physics for the foreseeable future.
A couple more topics in the year in physics 2024. The discovery of a planet around a dead star. We talk about our life here on Earth and, well, you know, is it billions? Billions of years in the future, the sun will eventually...
Yes, something like that, 5 to 8 billion.
Something will happen. We might not be around. You and I won't be. But this gives us some hope or some interesting discussions about whether or not Earth could survive the death of the sun.
That's right. So I really love this story that came out, researchers at Berkeley. And so what they saw was a white dwarf, which is a dead star. It's one of the end of life scenarios of stars. It's probably the end of life scenario for our star, which is not a massive star. And what they saw was a planet that was fairly similar to the Earth orbiting at a distance about two times the distance from the Earth. And this star was somewhere around the mass of the sun or something like half the mass of the sun. And so the kind of exciting thing about that for us on Earth is people wonder, so if as the sun goes through its end of life scenario in some billion years from now, you know, it will expand into kind of a red giant stage and will probably totally fry Mercury and Venus, could fry Earth, or it might push Earth out to a farther orbit. So we may survive that stage, the oceans burned off, and then it will go into another stage, which is it will blow off its envelope, and we'll just have this kind of dying hot core of the sun called a white dwarf. And the question is, you know, would the Earth survive that whole process? And people thought probably not.
Mm-hmm.
You will either be fried or something like that. Well, here we go. We see an example of a planet like Earth that made it through that process and is still hanging around its white dwarf, probably too far away to support life. Let's say have, you know, water in liquid form. But there it is. So obviously we're really interested in that system. How did it do that? And could Earth do this? So this result, just a lot of cool things about that. One is hope for us in 8 billion years. But also it's just in this area of exoplanets. I mean, you know, when I was young, we didn't even know if there were planets outside the solar system.
Mm-hmm.
And now we realize there are these planets outside the solar system called exoplanets. We've discovered thousands and thousands of them. And now we're finding this, these really crazy exotic systems. Like here's one that's like Earth, you know, 8 billion years from now. And so that's kind of a neat system. And then another cool thing about this story is the way that we discovered this, and that's through gravitational lensing. So this is an effect of general relativity, which Einstein talked about, which is, you know, mass causes a curvature in space-time, and then light traveling through that curvature is kind of warped or lensed. And that effect from general relativity helped us to see and study this system. So it's a neat application of, you know, this basic physics of general relativity, curvature of space-time that Einstein showed us.
One final topic as we run through, and not exhaustive, by the way. There's much more that happened in physics in 2024.
So much
right?
more.
But I wanted to finish with the search for super heavy elements, and I guess the big question is, will every science classroom in the world have to order a new periodic table at some point?
Yes, and that's why I love this story. So there's a lot of things to love about this story, and again, we go from the very large and stars and cosmic curvature of space-time down to the smallest, you know, and this is what physics gets to do, elements, you know, nuclear physics. And so this is kind of exciting from both physics and chemistry perspective. And the idea here is you've got your periodic table of the elements, and fairly recently, only in the past few years, we kind of finished off the latest period of that, you know, kind of squared off the periodic table with organoson element 118, the heaviest element. And so physicists are pushing forward to try to do element 119 or 120. And so that's exciting for several reasons. One, from like a basic nuclear physics point of view, we're trying to make more and more exotic nuclei, the biggest extreme nuclei that we can. Why? Well, we don't understand everything about the nuclear force. And so the more interesting and exotic situations we can make and subject protons and neutrons to, the more we can understand this basic force of nature.
Mm-hmm.
Another cool thing is that there's a thought or a hope. You know, these super heavy elements are very short-lived, milliseconds, let's say. But nuclear physics, nuclear force has a kind of a quirk to it, and that is if you have certain combinations of protons and neutrons, called magic numbers of protons and neutrons, those tend to be more stable, or their half-lives are longer. And so there's a hope that perhaps we make some of these super heavy elements and we get them big enough, we'll hit some of those magic numbers and these things may be stable, or if not, we'll live a fairly good amount of time, which will allow us to do chemistry on them. They might have some really interesting chemical properties or combined with interesting nuclear properties, which could have implications for nuclear medicine, for example. And so that's really neat. But then also, as you said, this would be the first element that would be in the eighth row.
Uh-huh.
So everyone's going to have to change their periodic table. We're going to have this complete incomplete row. And so, you know, we're living in a really special time where all the rows are finished.
Right.
That's never happened before, and it's never going to happen again. In a few years, we're going to have this incomplete row once again, probably for all of our lifetimes and maybe forever. So that's kind of fun. And also it'll be interesting to see, you know, if you can make that element and you can get your name on that, that's the quickest way to immortality
in
physics. And so if you're looking into going to physics, going to super heavy element research, get your name on that thing, and and you'll be immortalized in science.
Dr. Paul Hosmer, Chairman and Associate Professor of Physics here at Hillsdale College, as we recap the year in physics 2024. Dr. Hosmer, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, we talk with William Elliott Hazelgrove. His latest book, Dead Air, The Night That Orson Welles Terrified America. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. 27 years ago, my wife Judy and I started Shasta Gas with the help and under the direction of the Lord Jesus Christ. In fact, we believe He is the owner and we are simply the managers. Through the years, we have received many offers from major national corporations to buy Shasta Gas, but our commitment has always been to be and remain locally owned and family operated. Our daughter Karen Wehunt and her husband Jason now manage the daily operations of Shasta Gas and Shasta Tanks, a new business we started a few years ago. We now have the third generation of family members working in the business. Sunshine Stevens, our granddaughter, and her husband Adam, and our grandson Jason. Our commitment and motto are still the same. Our customers are warm friends. To support locally owned family operated business, please call Shasta Gas Propane at 530-365-3793. That's 530-365-3793.
Memory Lane Antiques, Vintage, and Collectibles in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273 in Anderson has distinct treasures to choose from, including vinyl records, DVDs, antique jewelry such as brooches and rings, necklaces and bracelets. Memory Lane Antiques, Vintage, and Collectibles also offers vintage clothing and accessories such as retro dresses and scarves, jackets and hats, along with vintage furniture, tablecloths and silverware, cookware and glassware. And don't forget Mantiques, including military memorabilia, camping and mining equipment, men's jewelry such as crosses and rings, sports memorabilia, and collectibles. Memory Lane Antiques, Vintage, and Collectibles in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273 in Anderson. Open Monday 10 to 6, close Tuesday and Wednesday. Open Thursday through Saturday from 10 to 6, and Sunday noon to 5. Memory Lane Antiques, Vintage, and Collectibles in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273 in Anderson.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, or North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to find us on X. We're at Hillsdale Radio. We're joined by William Elliott Hazelgrove, national best-selling author of multiple books, including this new one, Dead Air, The Night That Orson Welles Terrified America. William, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
This is an incident, a broadcast that is now nearly 100 years old, and though it lives large in the world of broadcasting, some people still might not be familiar. So as we start, can you give us just a brief synopsis of what this broadcast was all about and why it is still so important nearly 100 years from its origin?
Orson Welles had really sort of hit his stride at 23 in New York and had his own show, Mercury Theater on the Air. He had an incredible voice, one in a million voice for broadcasting. So he decides to do, in his one-hour show, H.G. Wells' novel War of the Worlds. This is his 17th broadcast on the series, and he decides to do something very different, make it a breaking news bulletin format, which is that old, you know, we break in to let you know Pearl Harbor has just been bombed. Well, so he wants to make this the format of the show. And in a nutshell, H.G. Wells' novel is basically Martians come to Earth, and they start exterminating humans with heat ray guns and poison gas. So he broadcast this on Halloween, October 30th, 1938, and shoots it out into the world. Some of the highlights, my book's called Dead Air, The Night Orson Welles Terrified America. The reason I call it Dead Air is because what Orson did is he had a reporter die on the air, and for 6 seconds, he had dead air, just nothing there, which was terrifying to people. So what happens from all this? Well, the broadcast goes out, and it sets off nationwide panic from coast to coast. Again, so revisionist book came out in 2015, said, oh, this wasn't such a big deal. But I did all my research with newspapers, and I found out this terror really was coast to coast with heart attacks, suicides, accidents, people literally running for the hills. Now, why is it relevant today? Well, all you have to do is go online to see that, you know, nothing's changed. There's all sorts of wild alien theories out there, Martians among them. And so, you know, you think, oh, with all our sophistication, all our various outlets, this could never happen again. Well, guess what? It really could.
All right, let's start with Orson Welles, the man behind War of the Worlds, the War of the Worlds broadcast, and you take us through his early life and career. One thing that jumped at me as I read Dead Air, I just had never considered. At the time of the War of the Worlds broadcast, Orson Welles is just 23 years old in essentially a brand new medium of radio. He's the young hotshot taking the radio waves by storm. Tell us how Welles got in a position to do something like War of the Worlds.
Well, you know, he came to New York at a time during the golden age of radio, which was akin to streaming. You know, this was a very new thing. People were watching series. Amos and Andy is the most popular series on the air, with literally people who go to a movie, they stop the movie to play Amos and Andy. Utility companies reported that there wasn't any toilets flush during Amos and Andy. So, you know, everybody had a radio. Okay, into this comes Orson Welles in this very experimental time of radio, too, where people are trying to figure out what the medium can do. They're using various new techniques. And Welles is at the center of this. He becomes the shadow, which was a major break for him. You know, Only the Shadow Knows, which was this big, big series. And he becomes that voice. He also gets on a show called March of Time. And March of Time was their 60 Minutes. But here's the thing to know. This is all produced news. There was no real news as we know it. Mm-hmm. In other words, when the Hindenburg crashes, they don't care that WLS was on the scene with an on-the-scene reporter who made a recording on a disc of everything that was happening. They care more to reproduce this in the studio with sound men and sound effects. So this was sort of standard operating procedure. So when CBS gives Welles a show, and one reason they give him the show is because he'd been a big hit in theater. He had two smash plays. He had Fascist Macbeth and Voodoo Harlem. And so, you know, he was this up-and-coming media figure. He gets his show. And Welles' approach to all art, but especially radio, was to tear it apart. Tear it apart and put it back together. And so that's what he does on his show.
William Elliott Hazelgrove is with us. His new book, Dead Air, The Night That Orson Welles Terrified America. You quote Welles saying, "The less a radio drama resembles a play, the better it is likely to be. It must be drastically different. Images called up by radio must be imagined, not seen." Okay, what did Welles understand about radio compared to the theater that helped him be so effective?
In fiction, there's a thing called suspension of disbelief, and this has to occur. And Welles was dead on saying radio is like a novel because basically, in a play, you're very cognizant of all the actors, and you follow it with your eyes. In radio, you describe it to people. It has to be evocative. You have to see it all through character, sound effects, and you create the scene in your head. It's like, again, reading good fiction. You read F. Scott Fitzgerald. You see Gatsby. You know, you see these scenes on Long Island. Well, this is radio. Wells understood that radio was the same sort of instrument where you would create a scene that would immediately take the listener into another world. So suspension of disbelief. Now, that's a very powerful thing, especially when you're taking people out of one reality, which was War of the Worlds, and putting them into something else where they have to believe, A, Martians are landing, and B, this is all happening within 30 minutes. But Wells was very brilliant in that he used a broadcast and a broadcast. He started it with dinner music.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're at this hotel, swanky hotel in New York, listen to dinner music. Then, bam, we break this for something that's crashed in Grover's Mill, New Jersey. So then we go to Grover's Mill, New Jersey with suddenly an on-the-spot reporter. And again, suspension of disbelief. There's no way the reporter could have gotten there within a minute, but he does. And we listen to him, and then, bam, we're back to the dinner music. So this is very disorientating us. And then, bam, we're back to another breaking news format. So again, once you're in for the ride, he can take you anywhere.
You referenced this report, very famous report in 1937, Herbert Morrison on WLS in Chicago, the Hindenburg disaster, and people perhaps can hear it in their mind, the humanity, as he describes the Hindenburg crashing. And yet, as you point out in Dead Air, it was not a live broadcast. That was not a reporter speaking live over the radio airwaves. It was done. It was recorded. It was replayed the next day, and people thought it was happening. You know, people understood what was going on. That was 1 year before War of the Worlds. So what did Wells learn from Morrison from that report about the power of radio and the power of the suspension of disbelief in terms of time?
So again, what Wells did was he did a couple of things. One, he compressed time, because in actually War of the Worlds, everything happens in the first half. The second half is very sleepy. And so by going back and forth, he creates this sort of disorientation back to the hotel, back to the Martians, where you start to accept that time no longer exists, because pretty soon we're going to be with the Army and the Air Force and everybody else within this 30 minutes. Also, what he learned from that broadcast was that you could make radio part of the play. In other words, breaking the third wall. We see this today all the time in House of Cards, Kevin Spacey's speaking directly to the audience. Well, that's what Wells did, you know, by listening to the Hindenburg broadcast. Radio, because the reporter on the air freaks out, okay, he realizes that you can sort of break the wall of radio. So suddenly, radio is a character in the drama. And when Wells has his on-the-spot reporter freak out, as happened in the Hindenburg, and then die, and then the 6 seconds of dead air, you know, radio is now part of it. Radio is part of this drama. We've lost this separation. And so the people listening to it realize things have gone totally out of control, that even radio has now been punctured and that this reporter just died. So Wells understood that this kind of immediacy, this sort of breaking these barriers, had a tremendous effect on people and really induced all this terror.
We will continue our discussion about Orson Welles and War of the Worlds in just a moment. William Elliott Hazelgrove with us. His book is Dead Air. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with department staff with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Financial Advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300 a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Get ready to celebrate love and style with KCNR. Valentine's Day is just around the corner, and KCNR is here to make your celebration unforgettable. Tune in each weekday from 7 to 9 a.m. for your chance to participate in our Love Song Challenge. We'll play a clip of a famous love song, and if you can name it, call 530-605-4566, and you'll be entered into our drawing to win a Valentine's Day grand prize package to be given away Monday, February 3rd at 8:10 a.m. during Free Fire Radio with Carl and Linda Botts. The Valentine's Day prize package includes a $100 gift certificate to Taroko Asian Bar and Grill at 1701 Pine Street in downtown Reading for a delicious Valentine's Day dinner with music from Pat Karch on piano. The Valentine's Day prize package also includes a dozen stunning long-stem red roses valued at $146, courtesy of Reading Florist at 3260 Bocelli Lane. Visit them online at readingflorist@charter.net. Also included, 24 premium chocolate truffles from Bouquet Bon Appetit at bouquetbonappetit@gmail.com. Also included in the Valentine's Day prize package, 2 tickets to Chocolate After Dark at the Turtle Bay Museum on Friday, February 7th at 6 p.m. Must be 21 and older to attend. KCNR is partnered with Taroko Asian Bar and Grill, Reading Florist, Bouquet Bon Appetit, and the Turtle Bay Museum to bring you this dreamy Valentine's Day prize package on KCNR. Join Token's radio show every Sunday at 2 p.m. on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as hosts Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Token's radio show with Linda and Christy this Sunday at 2 p.m. on KCNR. Big and exciting changes are underway.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. We've been talking with William Elliott Hazelgrove, author of the recent book Dead Air, The Night That Orson Welles Terrified America.
As we get to broadcast day, William, Welles picks War of the Worlds, and he begins to commission a script and works with the script. He's a busy guy. He's doing a ton of stuff. If I'm reading Dead Air correctly, it sounds as if there was relatively little rehearsal time leading up to the broadcast. Is that about right?
Yeah, he had plays going on, and as you know from the book, he used an ambulance to get from one radio show to another to get across Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And for War of the Worlds, he literally gave it to Howard Koch with 1 week. And Howard Koch was like, the writer was like, I can't do this. And so he finally does do it. Welles takes it with his producer partner, John Houseman. They tear it to pieces, and they make a recording of it. Welles listens to it. He thinks it's absolute garbage. And so literally the day of the broadcast, he's tearing it apart, adding things, really inserting much more of the breaking news bulletin format than was in there before. And literally before he's going on the air, he's, you know, putting lines here, putting lines there. And a lot of people thought while they were reading it, oh, this is going to be terrible. This is so silly. Nobody will believe this. You know, this whole Martian thing. They really thought it was going to be a disaster, you know, right up to the airtime. But that's also very Wellesian. Welles wanted to push the envelope to the point where people just absolutely freaked out. I mean, the actors and the producers and everybody else. And then he'd go on the air and see what would happen.
All right. Dead Air is the name of the book, and that moment in the broadcast of War of the Worlds is returned to over and over inside your narrative, that moment where Welles stands with his hands facing the ceiling, calling for complete and utter silence in the studio for 6 seconds after the reporter is killed in War of the Worlds. 6 seconds doesn't seem like a long time, but I think you and I both know in broadcast and radio, 6 seconds of nothing is forever. So how did that moment perhaps help define the broadcast, and what did it mean for Americans across the country who heard that?
Yeah. All right. So you have the on-the-spot reporter. He's saying the Martians have emerged from this pit. They're zapping everybody around them. Everybody's bursting into flames. Suddenly, there's silence. He drops the microphone, and we have the 6 seconds of silence. So to everybody in America listening, this is absolutely terrifying. This is, and she said, Wells has his hands up in the studio. He's holding the silence. And this is the moment when a lot of people just took off and ran for the hills and said, I'm getting out of here. I'm leaving. And Wells was very smart. He started at the station intro, but he pushed it all the way for 38 minutes. And during that time, by the way, CBS producers are trying, a guy named Davison Taylor is trying to get into the studio to stop the broadcast because the switchboards are lighting up. Then the police are trying to get in there, and John Houseman and his partner won't let them in because he knows they've got to get to that 38-minute mark. Because he, you know, and this is another thing that I point out in my book. Wells absolutely meant to do this. He absolutely meant for, you know, this to blow up and just see what was going to happen. And that's why they kept everybody out of the studio. That's why I had to get to the 38-minute mark. And by the way, by the time he got to the station identification, most people had taken off. They weren't listening to the radio anymore. And also what happened during this is the Charlie McCarthy, Edgar Bergen hour is playing exactly the same time. They cut to a singer, Nelson Eddy, and everybody. So Wells only has a million people listening. Bergen has 12 million. Suddenly, when everybody starts channel surfing, Wells gets supercharged up to like 10 or 12 million people. This is sort of a perfect storm. And they come in the middle of the broadcast, right when the, you know, reporter's getting incinerated. And this is real news to them, and they just lose their mind, and all hell breaks out across the country.
William Hazelgrove with us. Dead Air is his book, The Night That Orson Welles Terrified America. On that last point, Terrifying America, you mentioned earlier there are some revisionist reports or some, you know, more recent reports that say it wasn't that big of a deal. It was only an East Coast thing in terms of people being scared or frightened by the broadcast of Dead Air. What did your research for this book tell you about what really happened across the country?
You know, it really was coast to coast. Remember, CBS had 126 affiliates, so this beamed all the way across. To that point, there's a gentleman and his wife in the Redwood Forest in California listening to it in the car. By the way, that was another big reason this thing took off was people now had car radios, and this was very new. So he's in the Redwood Forest with his wife. They hear the broadcast. They want to get back to their kids. They run out of gas, and he writes later, all we can do is sit there and wait to be killed by the Martians. Another gentleman comes home to his wife somewhere in Connecticut, and she's sitting at the kitchen table with a vial of poison. He says, what are you doing? She says, I'd rather go this way than that. You know, I'm going to have the Martians kill me. Another gentleman jumps out of his bed in the hospital just after an operation, tears off all the tubes, jumps into his car bleeding, and takes off. People run out of bars without paying. They run out of restaurants without paying. They burst into theaters and scream, it's the end of the world. They burst into churches. Churches are overwhelmed with people coming in saying, it's the end of the world, I have to pray. Colleges, people, all these kids are trying to call. The switchboards are totally overloaded nationwide. You can't get calls through. One gentleman takes off to get his daughter from college, and his Studebaker takes off the doors, loads it up with 20 crying girls, strapping them in across the hood in the trunk, and then drives 100 miles back home. And accidents are occurring everywhere because people are driving like maniacs now. So the wave of terror was the people who actually listened to the broadcast, but then it was the people who were told about the broadcast, and each time the story got bigger and bigger and bigger. So this, you know, when I did the research, I found, you know, like a bus ride in North Carolina that was in the newspapers the next day where this bus driver found out that the world was ending and took everybody on just this crazy ride, you know, where they thought they were going to die that way. It's just, you know, all these people in concrete Washington, power goes out. Everybody literally runs for the hills and would not come back even when they told them there were no Martians. So, again, it really was nationwide.
Something like this happens, causing a panic like that. There's going to be some fallout. The very next day, a press conference, CBS has to respond. They put Wells in front of reporters. What happens at this press conference?
So this is a very produced press conference. If you watch it, it looks like a movie. And this is all CBS. There's 10 executives in the back, reporters in the front. Wells is at the center. They have this sort of question and answer. It's put out on a newsreel. And this is to sort of head off all the lawsuits that are coming our way. And Wells is getting death threats. CBS is getting death threats. Wells then goes to Woodstock, Illinois, just because that's where the Todd School was, where he went to school. And the Skipper Hill, who ran it, was sort of like a surrogate father. He hides out with his wife and child there. He figures his career's over. It's just absolutely finished. But then Dorothy Thompson, a leading columnist of her time, writes an editorial where she says Wells has done everybody a big favor, shown how ignorant, uneducated, and gullible the American people are. And then a guy like Adolf Hitler could easily take over the country because people will believe anything. By the end of her editorial, she's saying that Orson Welles deserves a medal. He was just doing his job, and how could people be so gullible? And that flipped everything around. Suddenly, Welles was this brilliant guy who pulled off this great show, and of course this will lead to him going to Hollywood.
All right. End of the book, William Elliot Hazelgrove's Dead Air in the epilogue. Now, there are multiple ways, I suppose, you could describe an event like this, what it does to a person, to a career. You know, Orson Welles always was in the spotlight because of War of the Worlds. You begin the epilogue by saying Orson Welles would never escape War of the Worlds. Was it more of an albatross than anything else for Welles?
I think at a point it did become a bit of an albatross. You know, he went and made Citizen Kane, which today is regarded as his brilliant film, but it lost money. RKO took a bath on it, $150,000. His next movie, Magnificent Ambersons, was even worse. And then the third movie never even got produced. This video's probably lost $1 million on him. So his name was really mud in Hollywood in terms of people giving him money for movies. You know, he married Rita Hayworth. He did star in several movies, and he directed some. But he never could kind of get back that white-hot fame that he got from War of the Worlds. So what happens? That's what really sticks to him culturally. You know, and so later in life, he, you know, tried to accept that and would go and promote it and go on talk shows. And that was always the question. It wouldn't be Citizen Kane. It wasn't any of his brilliant plays. It was War of the Worlds.
William Elliot Hazelgrove, his book Dead Air, The Night That Orson Welles Terrified America. William, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Oh, thanks for having me.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Paul Hosmer from Hillsdale's Physics Department and William Elliot Hazelgrove. His new book is Dead Air. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews on the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So, what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
John Cruz here with America Outdoors Radio. Be sure to tune in this weekend and catch the latest in fishing, hunting, conservation, and destinations. If you love spending time in the field or on the water or in the woods, you're going to love this show. It's America Outdoors Radio, the fastest growing outdoors radio show in the nation. Tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio.
to 5. Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. from my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, or North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.